Lyman Ag Supply in Lyman, Iowa, and the Family Business Center here in downtown Atlantic. This is Bob Debensy along with Grant Jelly, the Conservation Officer for Cass and Adair Counties, and a special guest today, Adam Arnold from Page Montgomery. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Double-barreled program, so we've got a lot of stuff to touch on. We'll get right into it. Number one, licenses, for the most part, expired on the 10th of January, so be aware.
That's right, Bob. That's a good reminder for folks, especially now that ice fishing is kind of hot and heavy. There's still some waterfowlers that are going after, you know, Canada geese this time of the year, so it's a good reminder for them to make sure they've got, you know, their hunting and habitat up to date, as well as their migratory bird licensing here for in Iowa. Their federal stamp will still be good, but they want to make sure they're up to date on all their other license requirements. And of course, if you're a ice fisherman, fishing license will be required as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we still got a little bit of the goose season left here in the southern zone, and of course the white goose season, that kind of goes on forever, so people can look forward to doing a little bit of that. Let's talk about the big thing right now is ice fishing. A lot of people seem to be out doing that, and what are some of the problems we're having?
I'll kind of give you the Cass and Adair perspective here quick, Bob, but the ice is plenty thick right now. I know out at Anita and some of the other local impoundments, we're seeing ice, you know, up to 12 to 14 inches thick. So on the weekends, we're seeing a lot of people out there on the ice in their shacks. And one of the things that we've kind of been running across here lately is ATVs out on the ice, which is fine. However, we need to make sure that they're up to date on their registration. And one of the other problems that I've been seeing at Anita is people pulling in at the campground and just driving off the side of the through the grass or through the state park area. So,
well, if I could understand that.
Yes. However, it's just as easy to access from the boat ramp, where you've got a nice smooth entrance there and plenty of parking. So that's kind of the purpose of a four-wheeler, is you don't have to walk. So, well, you know, what's a couple extra 100 yards of driving on the ice? So we just ask that people go in from the boat ramps and make sure that, like I said, run into a few people who have 2016 registration yet on their machines, and they need to remember that those have expired at the end of December in 2016. So we need to make sure that we've got that stuff up to date as well.
Okay, how about down south, Adam? What are you running into down there?
Yeah, it's a lot of excitement. You know, I'm always excited when ice fishing time comes around, and you know, obviously a little further south, a little bit warmer weather. I think we had a little more rain a little recently, but ice conditions overall look pretty favorable. I've been out several times myself, and certainly not afraid to take my family out. I always encourage folks that you kind of have to make your own decision on what you think is safe or not. But I, you know, on the local lakes and ponds, I'm seeing anywhere between 7 and 10 inches of ice with much regularity. I always encourage folks to keep in mind lakes like Viking, bigger lakes that hold waterfowl, like Caria, I think up until recently was holding some waterfowl. Some of those lakes will have some spots that may have just recently frozen over. I know there were several acres out kind of towards the middle of Viking there that was open considerably later than other stuff was. So you can usually see those discolorations in the ice, but just encourage folks to always check it, because there are some places that are probably a little bit thinner than the back arms and the coves. But over all in all, most of the public waters anyway, I have you know, seeing at least a handful of folks out there on a daily basis.
So. Talking before the program, talking to Grant, and he said ice fishing, people go ice fishing, they kind of throw all the rules out the window far as size and this type thing. Do you run into that a little bit too?
Oh, well, yeah, you know, and it's just like any other type of fishing. I think sometimes with ice fishing, there's a little more secrecy involved. You know, it seems like when you have a shelter and folks can't see what's going on inside those sometimes, and folks get a little swayed, you know, maybe to keep that extra fish over, or you know, just like the regular fishing, everybody's responsible for their own limits. We don't allow you to, you know, if there's three people in the group, you're not allowed to let one person catch all three persons' fish, you know, so they have to remain, you know, separate from each other's, and so we know who's caught what. So just you know, when you really get on the fish with the ice fishing, it's not hard to take an over limit. You know, it can be just as good as catching crappie off the beds in the spring. So just encourage folks to you know, check those limits, what's the length limits of the fish, the number they can keep, and just keep those in mind when they're out there. We want folks to have a great time. We want folks to catch some nice fish, but we don't want folks to to slip up and get themselves in a bind.
That's something I didn't know. You can't party fish?
Yeah, no. Each person responsible for their own limit of fish.
I did not know that.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and that, I think a lot of Iowans are kind of under the assumption that since we allow party deer hunting, it carries over to every species, and that's simply not the case. And that's something that we struggle with on a day-to-day basis. But, yeah, you know, it's called the daily limit because that's each angler or each hunter's daily limit. And we want to make sure, like Adam said, that when the action can be hot and heavy and you've got two guys in a shack and you're throwing fish here and there, you know, when the conservation officer walks up and he says, how many fish do we have, and we start counting, you want to be the first guy to go, because sometimes that second guy, if we haven't had the fish separated to know whose is what, you know, you may end up with two, three, four, who knows how many fish over their limit. So it's real important, you know, like I said, ice fishing, sometimes I think people kind of discard the rules and they think, well, it's, you know, I got to get out here while the action's hot. But you need to be mindful of the regulations still, because it's just like fishing from a boat. I've run across some people who are using handles on their dippers or other objects to try and measure fish, and that just doesn't cut the mustard. I mean, you've got to have a tape measure, and it's got to be a good tape measure. So, you know, not trying to scare people and think that this is a very complicated sport, but there's some simple rules that are required, and if you follow them, it can be a heck of a good time.
I'd like to have a film of you guys trying to sort a couple guys out on, well, on who did what.
We could use the extra counter.
Yeah, so. Probably can. Yeah. Okay, let's go back down south again. A lot of coyote hunting going on. There will be now that the bird season is pretty well winding down. Southern counties, a lot of coyote hunters down there.
Yep, you bet. We're seeing a lot of folks out chasing the dogs, and you know, a lot of good sport to be had there. The things I like to remind folks of, you know, trespassing laws still apply. One of our very common complaints during coyote hunting, unfortunately, folks think, you know, I got permission on that property 5 or 6 years ago. I'm still good to go this year. You know, property owners change, use of the land changes, landowners' feelings on things change. And I always encourage folks every year, and this would apply for any type of hunting, honestly, we're fishing, you know, private farm ponds and things, you should be getting that permission every year from that landowner, because things change, you know. Landowners pass away and folks inherit those lands, and it's just one of our very common complaints. Folks, you know, heading out, driving all over, you know, farmers' fields, doing things that just get a little bit crazy. So I encourage folks to think about that. You know, so far as hunting, the coyote rules are pretty wide open, but there's still things you can't do. You know, you can't shoot from a public roadway. You got to obey all traffic laws. Sometimes we see folks get a little crazy with their driving when they're chasing.
Yes.
I see some interesting things for sure. So just encourage folks to think about those things when they're out there, and you know, try to keep it legal and try to give it a good name. You know, it doesn't take very many people doing it wrong to start swaying the opinion of folks that used to not care that folks were out chasing coyotes if they see folks doing things that are a little bit, maybe not even illegal, but unethical. You know, things that they think would be unethical can sway those people that used to not care to the side where they don't want them out there on their property anymore.
Yeah. You guys do some hound work, a lot of hound chasing down there. We don't have that much up here.
Not as much, and that's just what I was going to bring up. That's probably the other major complaint that we get is coyote hunters hunting with dogs, which is perfectly acceptable, but you know, it's not okay to turn your dogs loose and let them run across private landowners' places just to flush out the coyotes. And we really see this become a heated issue during deer season when it's going on, because you've got a guy out there that's trying to deer hunt and a pack of coyote dogs comes running through and scares out everything for 2 miles. So That's a very difficult thing for us to enforce as well, because number one, we don't take dogs to jail for trespassing. We don't write dogs tickets, and it's hard for, and we can sympathize a bit with the dog owners in that it can be difficult to control where they're going to go. But you know, the best advice is if you've got dogs that are going onto somebody else's property and you don't have permission, get them off there as soon as possible and do it unarmed. If you're walking across, you know, a farmer's field with a loaded rifle trying to get your hounds back, that becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just a little bit of common sense goes a long way. And then we continually see issues where the landowner gets frustrated over and over again, and they end up taking matters into their own hands and shooting the dogs. And, you know, it's not fair to the dogs. And it can put a person in a lot of legal problems, both criminally and civilly at times. So that's just a can of worms that we deal with every year. And it's unfortunate that people don't have the ethics to try to get permission, because we want people to hunt coyotes. I mean, there's not many predators of them, you know, right. So it's important for us to have hunters out there doing it, but all rules don't go out the window for that too. So just a little common sense and courtesy goes a long way.
Coyote fur is worth a little money if you don't blow tibia a hole in it.
That's right. It is one of the few fur bears that we're seeing a little bit of value to this year. You know, coons, as we've talked on previous shows, are just not worth very much this year, and as a result, we see very few trappers pursuing them. But coyotes, they do have some value, especially if it's a prime pelt. But yeah, if you're going to shoot them up with a rifle, that can definitely affect the value. But we want to make sure that people are utilizing the hide as well. You just can't shoot them and leave them lay either. They have to be removed from the field. So that's another thing that we sometimes run across.
Changing gears completely, I got the 2017 edition of the Missouri Natural Events Calendar. Grant, you got one, but guess who didn't? Adam didn't get one, so you and I are ahead of him. But I learned about the Hellbenders, and now I learned that you guys have got snow fleas in Missouri. Tell me about the snow flea population.
Well, you put me on the spot there.
That's an odd question.
I can tell you this, they're only around when there's snow on the ground, I guess. But, I that's something you'd have to talk to an insect expert about, I guess. But it's a neat calendar. I mean, it's got all sorts of information on, you know, different days and things that go on. So,
It says right here, snow fleas are visible on snow in sunny wooded areas.
Well, there we go. And that's coming up when? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay, so be on the lookout.
Today, actually, tomorrow they'll be coated in ice down there.
They could.
Alaska's got ice worms, and Missouri's got snow fleas, and we're kind of out in left field. Whatever's left over. Okay, great program, guys. A lot of stuff going on. Keep up the good work. Keep people straightened up. License those ATVs. There's a little penalty goes with that if you don't. And, of course, buy a regular license. And you can run coyote without a fur bear's license, correct? Yeah, you can do that on just a hunting license. So pretty easy to play it straight.
It is.
You bet.
Remember the Turn-In Poachers program. That is a good one, and you can get all kinds of help on that. So for the Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center here in Atlantic, this is Bob Evensy along with Grant Jelly and Adam Arnold on this morning's Conservation Report.